me another one. Give me another one. Roger, watch this. Wake up, Roger. Check this out, Roger. Go, Kellyanne. By the way, that's not Hillary. It's Kellyanne.
I don't know.
Oh, you did? I was trying to play it coy. I just kept pretending to call her Kellyanne because I thought it was Hillary. That's why I was so cold to you. Sorry, Kellyanne.
This campaign is not a reality show. We need someone with experience in government, not someone with experience on reality TV.
If this was a reality show, let me tell you, Geraldo would be mopping the floor with your sorry, saggy ass.
Pretty good, sir.
It was pretty good.
Right, Roger? I could do these all day. Give me another one. Shut up.
There are a lot of questions about your campaign's relationship with the Russian government.
Who cares about Russia?
No one's going to want to elect a Russian puppet.
Puppet? Who's the puppet? Where's the puppet? Where's the puppet?
You're the puppet.
I'm the puppet? No, no puppet, no puppet, no puppet. You're the puppet.
Great.
You like that one? I'm definitely going to do that one. Now, where's the puppet?
Right here, sir.
Wow, look at that. He's got a little top hat. Is that a bunny? Hi, how are you? Well, Mr. Bunny, nice to talk to you. Why aren't you talking? Are you sad? It's pretty sad. Why are the puppets leaning forward and never standing straight up? Is he scared? Roger? Roger? Roger?
Archivist's note. Our interview today was postponed, and not because I woke up in the bathtub of my hotel room with a bruise on my neck, even though I did. I arrived at the West Wing at the usual time, but something was different. John Kelly brought me a cup of coffee. Kellyanne Conway asked me my favorite brand of golf club, even though I'm sure she doesn't play. Stephen Miller silently offered me half of his runny breakfast sandwich. Nobody told me where the president was, which was unusual, since 10 a.m. was usually when he would call down to a subordinate's office and insist that he'd been working hard for hours and order them to announce out loud that they were proud of him. I sat for half an hour listening to the staff complain about their dating lives until the door of the Oval Office finally opened. And to my shock, there was the president on the couch in his bathrobe sitting next to my wife, Peg. I felt the heat shoot up my spine into my neck. If I hadn't already thrown up that morning, I might have vomited all over the most famous office in the world. We hadn't talked in days because this was happening. My head spun with jealousy and rage. How dare she? She was jealous of me for being close to him. Like they're all jealous. The liberals, the Mexicans, the crybaby college students, the women on the news. They want to stop us from our work because they know they don't measure up. I never thought my wife, Peg, would join their numbers. But she had. On her high horse after she'd overheard some boys will be boys on the phone. What men do. I don't blame Trump. Trump's appetites are not for me to question. It was Peg who decided to use her weapon to punish me. But it wasn't going to turn out the way she wanted. If she was trying to separate me from my president, she had miscalculated. The cause I was now part of was greater than her. The bond I had with this great man was stronger than any man could have with a woman. But if she was trying to get my attention, she had it. The world went black. The next thing I knew, I was in a broom closet with Rob Porter, who cracked open a beer and told me that nobody saw anything. Kelly would take care of it. An hour later, I went back to the Oval Office. The president was behind that great oak desk. He smiled at me. The presidency. General Kelly's presentation of a proper presidential personage. As a general, protocol is of the utmost importance. But as a gentleman, it is most vital that one comport himself with the manners befitting a member of the noblest class. It is with great excitement and humility that I present you with these pages, in which you shall find a collection of axioms and customs which, if properly applied, shall ease the comfort of yourself and your peers both high and low in all affairs you may participate in as President of these United States. Watch not the muted television when receiving a visitor to your office or bedchamber. Leer not at the interns who enter one's Oval Office, for they are only teenagers. Crying out in rage from one's bedchamber is not appropriate at any time of night. A president shall refrain from suggesting that watching his chief of staff engaged in a marriage embrace would somehow improve the marriage observed. A president shall pay attention to his nuclear codes and shall not place them atop his dining table. A president shall take care that the White House tablecloths and drapes are not used as napkins or handkerchiefs. No matter the station of the observed, it is never appropriate to refer to anyone as that brown one. Keep in mind that bawdy limericks do not translate into the Asian languages. Lock not the door while one is bathroom tweeting. One's bits and pieces should not be showing while wandering the hallway in an open robe. They are for private only, for a wife or mistress. A president shall close his robe while wandering, even when in the private quarters of the White House, but especially in the public areas and gardens. Dump not 5 times a day, but preserve one's bowels for a healthy 2 movements, one in the morning and one in the evening. Never shake a man or woman's hand so violently that they look around in curious disgust. A president shall always take his McDonald's wrappers and place them in the bin beside the bed. Also, there is no such game as find the nuggets in the toilet. A president shall never tell another man's wife that she should wash her hair. If a man's wife is listening on speakerphone while a president sees fit to invite her husband to solicit prostitutes with him, the president will make sure that the volume is turned to an appropriate level, so if she chooses to scream or yell, the intensity of her voice will be transmitted by the medium. When leering at girls between the ages of 13 and 17, a president shall only look at a quarter angle and always must have a newspaper promptly placed on his lap. When calling for a nuclear strike, use a medium to low tone and recognize that most likely the strike will not happen. It is polite for a president to express his anger, but remember the severity of such an act. Also, the nuclear football may not be used as a Starbucks gift card, no matter how many times they may be scanned. It is inappropriate for a father to ask his daughter to sit on his lap during trade negotiations. When one is speaking to another leader, do not engage in raising of the hand and demonstrating the thumbs up throughout the conversation. A president in a meeting with another diplomat will shake hands firmly and make eye contact and not raise his hand as if to strike him. A president shall not use the Situation Room to rendezvous with pornography actresses of a certain age. Throw not candies at female heads of state, nor refer to them as bowl cut or dump truck. A president shall always remember to redact certain parts of the Kennedy assassination documents, no matter how intriguing they may be. But he must also never promise to release documents from the Kennedy assassination and then fail to do so. A president should reconsider hiring his son-in-law, who has ties to organized crime, as an advisor on a revolving temporary top-secret clearance. A president shall refrain from referring to his chief of staff as Nancy Pants, or Silly Face, or Miss Frenchie. Woe to he who drips in pleasure, for onanistic stains are most unappealing on a White House sofa. A president shall purport to maintain a minimally civil relationship with his wife. Members of the press should only ask the president pleasing questions about his wall and other things that will bring him delight. The staff of the president shall remind the general population that the president does not make waste, but instead has a pure processing system without any holes to evacuate. A president would mind himself to apply his Polydent liberally to his top bridge before giving speeches. A president should spend every day reading the letters of learned men, and not depend too slavishly on favored words like tremendous, incredible, believes, or babies. A president shall refrain from curtsying when a subordinate says something flattering to him. A president shall take his hair and fold it at 6 right angles every morning, each one overlapping and folding atop the other. Then he shall apply liberally hairspray to set the hair in the proper position. Once complete, he shall rub cream on the back of his head, which shall be made of gluteal meat, so placed on the back of his head, such that the lower back of his head might be placed on his head's top. A president shall avail himself of a yearly prostate exam from a qualified medical practitioner. The president and his advisors shall bear in mind that there is no president of Taiwan. A president shall not make an imitation of a foreign visitor's accent or demeanor as soon as they depart, no matter how silly their voice or comportment. He who wishes to serve at the White House but is unable to maintain peaceful relations in his marriage shall purchase a heavy skin cream of appropriate coloring to keep private his wife's eye bruises, or at least a bag of potatoes or oranges. He shall also encourage his abused wife to speak her accusations publicly before the FBI background process has begun, in order to save face for his president's chief of staff. Archivist note. I'd ignored my wife Peg's calls until my Android battery ran out. I took the long way back to the Hilton Garden via my favorite liquor store. I got a bottle of something. I remember it being brown, but maybe that was the bag I was half in. And took a ride on the metro. I always liked trains. The platform was full of thugs. The nation's capital, the trains, the infrastructure. Who built that? People like that? Or people like me? Maybe one of them will throw me on the tracks. It would look like a mugging gone wrong. The President of the United States would tweet about it and make sure these kids would spend the rest of their lives in jail. I wondered what picture of me they use on the news next to their high school graduation photos. Maybe the one of me and Peg in St. George's with the little umbrellas. I stood by the edge of the platform and stared. The breeze from the train knocked me off balance and I puked on a bench. The thugs asked me if I was okay. I stumbled onto the train and sat down. I woke up on my feet on the sidewalk next to a billiards hall next to a laundromat. It was full of illegals smoking and dancing and laughing. On a Wednesday night. Who's paying for you to enjoy yourselves? I asked two women sitting out front, one pregnant. I said, how do you stand up with that anchor baby? A salt and pepper guy with a mustache and a gas station uniform told me to fuck off. So I told him to go back to Mexico. I can get into any golf course in the world because that's who I am. And I yelled the president's name until my throat was hoarse. I went looking for the bus, and a trans woman, hooray, took my $50 and told me to catch a cab by the overpass. The cabbie was Korean, and I asked him what he thought of the president saving his sorry-ass country. He told me that I didn't have enough money, and that I was lucky that the girl would let me keep my wallet. So we went to the 7-Eleven, where a guy told me that he was actually a Sikh and that I needed to leave. The woman at the front desk of the Hilton Garden Inn wouldn't let me kiss her. So I went upstairs and wrote a TripAdvisor review. Here are some calls the president made. Birth of a Statesman. Call, Peggy Whitson, Commander, International Space Station.
Hello, space?
Hello, Mr. President. It's an honor to speak with you.
Miss Peggy Whitson?
I'm married and a doctor.
Up in the sky, far above Earth. I'm calling to congratulate you for your space time.
Yes, sir. I reached a milestone of being the longest person, the longest American in space.
How long are you? I didn't know this.
I've been in space the longest time, the longest extended stay in space of any American.
Any American in space.
That's right.
So how tall are you?
I'm the longest... Well, I'm about 5'6". But I'm the longest.
You can't be the longest.
I'm the astronaut who spent the longest time in space.
You're the astronaut.
I'm an astronaut.
Astronaut.
That's a new word.
Thank you. I've invented a new word. You can't just have astronaut. It makes people think you're a man.
It doesn't, actually. There have been many female astronauts, and I'm proud to be in their number.
Listen, I want you to go to Mars.
Are you announcing a Mars mission?
Yes, I'm announcing it right now. And I want you to do it as soon as womanly possible. Move the space station to Mars. Step on it.
I don't think that's possible.
Did you see the dead teacher up there?
Excuse me?
The one who blew up.
No, sir.
We're on a mission to retrieve her body.
From the Challenger?
And bring it back to Earth so we can bury it with dignity.
Sir, if I could be perfectly frank, the whole problem was they didn't make it to space. The Challenger crashed into the ocean.
That's not what I read.
It was one of the saddest days of my life.
Well, it's a sad thing, but it was a woman pilot, so you can't... I'm sorry.
Sir, this call, I'm told, is to express your congratulations on the work that we're doing on the space station. And if you'd prefer to discuss other subjects, I'm afraid I should return to my work.
How do you breathe up there?
Air, sir.
How?
We bring air up and breathe it. And we recycle the carbon dioxide and pump in the oxygen.
You gotta send it up? How do you send it up?
Well, we have compressed air and chemicals to combine, and we have plants here, and some of the plants refresh the air. It's a chemistry experiment, sir. It's actually fascinating when you get into the details.
Okay, I don't care about it. You have air up there. I don't like the recycling. It's a total myth. This notion of the environmentalists and the tree huggers who are ruining business for everybody. As far as I'm concerned, it could stand to be a little warmer in D.C. right now. And if the earth gets hotter because of global warming, then we'll all be on beachfront property. Am I right or am I not right?
Sir, if I could take this opportunity, I would emphasize to you the reality of global warming and what a complicated issue.
If there's one thing I know, it's reality. I was the host of a show called The Apprentice.
I don't watch much TV.
On NBC!
As I said, I don't watch a lot of television, but I hear that it was a very well-liked show, and I congratulate you on it.
Congratulations to me.
Yes, sir.
You don't get TV up in space, so what do?
We actually do watch movies.
What was the last movie you watched?
We watched some old movies. We watched Casablanca.
Ooh, that's a good one. Casablanca... Give me a kiss, Sam. Give me a kiss.
Yes, sir.
Here's looking at you, Sam. Play it again, kid. The two great lines from Casablanca. And then they found the Falcon at the end. I miss the days when we had men like Bogey and Bacall. All of them are gone. Smokin' Joe DiMaggio, Barbara Billingsley, Marilyn Monroe, old Liz Marriage. Remember when that video came out?
No, sir.
You want DirecTV up there? I mean, I gotta imagine the signal's gotta be great. You're right next to the satellites.
Actually, no, sir. We are actually in a higher orbit than the geostationary satellites that provide DirecTV. Isn't that interesting? So if anything, we could look down at the satellites.
Well, that doesn't seem like an interesting movie.
Well, it's not a movie. It's our actual perspective here on the edge of space. It's the reality of our scientific mission here to explore...
strange new worlds and seek out new civilizations.
Well, sir, I actually am a Star Trek fan.
I love Star Trek.
You do?
Absolutely. Uhura? Big piece of ass. Too bad she's black. And Sulu, though, turned out to be a little light in the Asian slippers.
Sir, I'm not comfortable with this line of discussion. Again, as far as I'm concerned, you're calling the space station to congratulate us on the work we're doing, and we appreciate that sentiment.
I have a new plan for space. Have you heard about Space Force? We're building a Space Force. We have an Air Force. We need a Space Force. Space Force One.
I see.
A fleet of spaceships that circle the Earth, fighting aliens and ISIS.
Well, actually, the Russian cosmonauts and the astronauts in NASA both agree that it's inappropriate to militarize outer space. Our countries disagree on many things, but we agree on that. Humanity's shared future is in the stars on a peaceful mission of exploration, not the continued warfare that has defined most of our species' existence on Earth.
Yeah, tell that to the Klingons. These people are unforgiving. Ba-ba-ba-ba-doo-doo-doo-doo.
I actually remember that episode, sir.
It was Spock's Ponfar. Every 7 years, he finally gets horny and needs to get laid. Can you imagine that? You don't have sex for 7 years?
Well, we're about to round the planet and be out of range because the sun's rising where we are, so we're not going to be able to maintain this channel of communication when we're in direct sunlight.
It's night out here.
Sir, I'm going to have a hard time explaining this to you in the amount of time we have, but I'm happy to hear that you're a Trek fan. I see myself as a bit of a Captain Janeway.
No, you're more of a Beverly Crusher.
Thank you for calling me, Mr. President.
Hello?
Call Lee Nak-yon, Prime Minister of South Korea, via translator.
Kelsey, make a note for the library. I've been president for a year, and look, the country has no problems.
I'll write that down, but there are still a few problems, though, wouldn't you say?
Like what? What's the problem? What's your problem?
Infrastructure?
We're taking care of the infrastructure. It's going to be big. A big week. I'm saving it for sweeps.
Fair enough. What about North Korea? A lot of people are saying that one of the most pressing issues of your presidency will be attempting to negotiate with the North Koreans, trying to broker peace on the peninsula.
It's easy. So easy. Obama was too weak. Just do the nuclear. Who cares? That's what Obama said. I'll show you how easy it is. I'll call the South Korea guy right now. It's ringing.
Hello, the office of Lee Nak-yoon.
Who's there?
Lee Nak-yoon.
Are you having a stroke?
This is Lee Nak-yoon's office.
Orange, you glad I didn't say banana?
I'll connect you right with the Prime Minister.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, yes.
Hello?
Yes, Mr. President.
I was going to hang up.
Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't. The Olympics went off smashingly, wouldn't you say?
I don't know. I don't watch that stuff.
Oh, Vice President Pence was here.
Yeah, he likes to look at all the ice skating. He's always at the ice skating. Because he likes the packages on the skaters with the packages. You know what I mean.
I'm sorry, my translator is shaking his head.
Well, let me tell you about Mike. Mike likes to get in the toboggan and bobsled, you know what I mean? With the whole Jamaican bobsled team. But it's not about going down the mountain. It's just about going down. You get it now?
Yes.
And the funny thing is, he'd hang gay people from the back of a truck if he could.
Yes, sir. Well,
He tells me all the time. He's like, I'm glad all those people got AIDS in Indiana. I'm like, geez, Mike, you're crazy. You shouldn't say stuff like that.
Well, Mr. President, I want to offer my sincere thanks. The hard position you took on North Korean aggression since the beginning of your...
Oh, yeah.
Your term has resulted in their softening their stance toward us and had us marching under the same flag at the Olympics. So credit where credit's due. The posturing you used against them seems to have defrosted the relationship between the North and South on our peninsula.
Oh, wow! I got a burger meat defrosting upstairs. I'm making my own Big Macs tonight. No progress on the wife, though.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm not sure if the language barrier is getting in the way, but I'm trying to give you a compliment on your posture.
You know something? The posture I took with North Korea was to lean a little further than I normally do. And I put my arms back. That's a different posture than I've ever held.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how was that Kim Jong-un? Un, the first, in French. What's your sister like?
Well, I certainly didn't meet her, sir.
Oh, wow, really? That was the whole point. I thought she'd come to South Korea, and you guys would fall in love. You'd get together, and then you'd make a baby. And it's the first baby that's South Korea and North Korean. And then that boy would be the golden boy. And then Eddie Murphy shows up, and he's like, whoa, what you talking about? I'm Eddie Murphy. I don't need no golden child. But he does. And then he learns to believe after he meets an Asian girl. And then the world's problems are solved. The golden child frees everybody.
I had to switch translators in the middle of that, sir. One of them gave up.
Beverly Hills Cop 3 is pretty good, too. Lots of people say it's the worst of the series, but I think the whole idea of being stuck in an amusement park was way more interesting than 2, which I think let a lot of things down. I mean, let's face it, that chase at the end was pretty boring. What happened to Eddie Murphy?
Yes, sir. I got the box of DVDs you mailed to me.
Yeah, did you get Norbit?
I believe so, sir.
You see that one with Robert De Niro?
I haven't watched any of them at all, sir.
Well, you should watch them. Don't you Koreans love movies? It's all you do, make movies.
I personally have my hands full with the business of state.
Ooh, Gangnam Style. Ump, ump, run, run, dun, 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 on, run, dun, dun, dun. Ooh, Gangnam Style.
You know, Gangnam is a neighborhood in Seoul.
Super bad. Because I got Seoul, I'm super bad. Hello?
The Chinese president is on the other line. I'm actually very tempted to take this call. My translators are nodding.
No, hold on. I'm sorry. It's just been hard because I've been looking through my CD collection while we've been talking. So what happens now with Jong-un?
We'll plan a summit, then cancel the summit, then have a quick summit where nothing happens, and then wind up where we were.
And then we can finally have peace in the Middle East.
Call Emmanuel Macron, President of France.
Who is this?
Emmanuel Macron, Mr. President. The President of France.
Did you call me?
Yes, sir.
Oh.
We had a call scheduled, sir.
I made a phone call. I was picking up the call. I was calling this woman.
Very well, sir.
I was picking up the phone to make a call, and then you were on the line.
I'm sure that was not the case, sir. I'm sure that your staff sat you down with the telephone for this call.
I don't know about that. I'm not even sure it's for me.
France is one of your country's oldest and dearest friends, and I'm calling to implore you to remain a party to the Paris Accord.
Of course you want me to come to your party. It's Paris. You don't have to go anywhere.
It's an agreement about climate change, saving the world from the devastating effects of climate change.
Climate change? I like it just the way it is. Don't touch that thermostat.
Sir, there are more than 150 countries in the accord, and the heads of state are unanimous about the risks we face.
Heads of state. We're all heads of state. And we head the state up very well. All 50 states. First off, though, I'm the biggest head of state. I'm the big guy. And in that way, I'm all your boss.
Not exactly, sir. First among equals, perhaps, as far as the Western Alliance is concerned.
Last time I checked, you guys were really hurting in World War II.
Last time I checked, World War II was 75 years ago.
What? I don't want to do math. What about Vietnam? You guys lost that one, too. Bunch of losers.
All right, sir. I don't believe this is a productive topic of conversation.
I'm kidding. Listen, you need to lighten up. You French people, you're all so serious. You're all about the love and the baguettes and the wine and the cheese.
Ah, I see you've spent some time here, sir.
I was just at NATO, which is a province in France.
No, sir. You were in Paris, sir.
Bless you.
Well, I believe we could have had a more productive NATO meeting. The meeting of the Allied States, sir.
We had a wonderful meeting. It was one of the great meetings. Going there to see all the history, and there's so much. I mean, think about that. There are Neanderthals that lived in caves so deep underground. And they were having sex with human ladies.
That's true, sir. Some interesting science has come out about that in the past few years, that modern humans are descended from hominids who mated with Denisovan man.
I don't know. Dinosaur man? I hope not. I don't know about that. What's that?
It's interesting that there were multiple species of humans on the planet before modern man emerged.
Black, Asian, Jewish?
It doesn't quite correspond exactly that way.
I don't know. There might have been a lot of different humans. But just like on The Apprentice, only one group of humans could win. And it turned out to be us humans. But I'll tell you this. Those Neanderthals, I mean, they must have had some great personalities. Because they were very ugly. So for them to get some human lady pussy, unbelievable.
I see, sir. Perhaps it was ugly humans who were sleeping with Neanderthal women.
Excuse me. I don't think that there are any ugly humans. Neanderthals are ugly. You ever see a Neanderthal lady? I saw one at the Natural History Museum. She had tits down to her knees.
Well, that's what I'm saying, sir. Perhaps it was human men who were pursuing the Neanderthal women.
I doubt it. Are you kidding me? What's wrong with you?
Well, I don't know then. Perhaps, yes, it was charming Neanderthal men who were able to seduce human women.
That's exactly right. Listen, I have a question. Would you swap out your hottie wife for some tit-dragging Neanderthal biddy?
No, sir. Of course I would not.
Well, there you go. Case in point. But some guy with a big brow and $1 billion in a Swiss bank account, trust me, she'd be legs up, tits down in 2 seconds.
All right, sir. I think we should talk about our mutual security.
Don't you French people like talking about shit like this?
Not in so many words, sir.
So you guys don't like to swap wives?
Some people enjoy that practice, Mr. President, but I am not among them.
I don't know, Macaroon. You're a dodgy one, and your wife is an old lady, so your priorities are all over the place. But let's put it this way. We saw all the great people in Germany and in Europe. We saw Merkel, you, the British lady, all the people from all the countries in Europe together in one place.
Well, yes, sir, but I should point out that you declined to put the support of your people and your country and your military behind NATO, the most successful military alliance in human history.
I gave that speech where I talked about how great all the Allies were during World War II, and then immediately the next day I said how useless NATO was and how we should pull out. That makes perfect sense.
I am afraid it doesn't, sir. And I would have to request that you make a stronger statement in support of the alliance. I will remind you that the one time NATO's Article 5 was invoked was after the United States was attacked and the Allies joined you in battle in Afghanistan.
They didn't join me. I didn't fight over there. I got bone spurs.
Your people.
They're not my people.
Your military.
It's not my military, then.
The U.S. Army.
What about them?
We fight side by side, shoulder to shoulder, as brothers in arms.
From the halls of Montezuma to the revenge of Tripoli.
Yes, sir.
Remember that? Where's Tripoli? In France?
It's in Libya.
What?
It's in Libya.
Where is it now?
Tripoli is in Libya. But my staff tells me you're considering making a visit to the south of France. Have we had the pleasure of your company before, sir?
I don't know. I've been to Europe, but I never pay attention to the borders.
I see.
But I'll say this. If we're going to the south of France, it's going to be a beautiful villa. We're staying in a beautiful villa. It's so wonderful there with the people. You might be weak-kneed little cowards, but you know how to screw and how to chew. And that's one thing we can all agree on.
Well, thank you, sir.
You have dandruff on your right shoulder.
How can you know this?
A lady never tells.
Interview. The Davos Conference.
I love the Davos. It's an incredible place. All the bigwigs come here and they think they're the biggest deal in town just because they have that old Europe money. They act all snooty. And can I have a crumpet with my little egg pot? Give me a break.
So why come here?
I read the cover of an incredible book about how these Davos Euro people are lizards. Many people are saying they are lizards dressed like humans. They come to Europe where there is no air conditioning, so it's hot and moist so they can lay their eggs. And because of that, there are so many rituals. But it's mainly for the Davos Conference, the Davos Sex Conference.
Why do you say Davos Sex Conference?
Haven't you been to the parties?
No, sir. I've never been.
Oh, my God. Let me tell you something. You think these people are freaky? First off, we show up and they take me into a room and they go, you got to put your hand on this 5-star thing. It looked like a bunch of triangles tied together. And they go, you got to prick your finger. And I go, I already did a blood test when I became president and I've got it all the good blood. I'll tell you, I got all the great blood and the many blood diseases. I've got hemoglobins, hobgoblins, everything. They make me put my hand in this little star of Jared, but it was missing one of the corners.
A pentagram.
Uh-huh. So I put my hand on it, and then they made me say an oath. And I always love saying oaths. I'll say any oath you want. I did the Pledge of Allegiance, and they said, no, repeat this other stuff. I had to say Santo Sangui something. Who knows? Then they put you in a robe, which I love. I thought I was getting a spa treatment. Then they opened this door, and oh boy, everyone was just going at it. You should have seen it. The sprinkler system came on out on the balcony. I got soaked. I was like, oh boy, all this water's on me. So I went back inside. The party took a real turn. Everyone's in masks and hoods. There's a guy with a synthesizer. He's just hitting the same note over and over again. I said, play something new. I went up and I requested Only the Good Die Young by Billy Joel. He didn't know it. I mean, who doesn't know that song? Also, everyone was looking at me because they were standing in a circle. I walked right through it. Anyway, there was this hot, naked lady. She looked like a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model. She was sitting in the middle of the room. There were two guys in red cloaks, one guy in a purple cloak, and they all had these weird penis masks on. Now, you know I don't go for that weird stuff, okay? I'm vanilla. My favorite thing is to bring a girl into my room, make love to her, and then show her the Donahue tape, the VHS, and then catch a few Z's. Listen, the reason they call it missionary position is because you're on a mission to finish and lie down. So then they start yelling, and it sounds like they're talking backwards on a record. It's like this. It was like, they were talking backward. So then I tried to play it forward, but it didn't work. And I got bored because I had no bars. So I pulled the guy's mask up and he kept saying, no, no, no. He was the Prime Minister of Norway. So I said, how are you doing? Your wife is so beautiful. Where is she? I gotta see her. He says, please don't ever say you saw me here. And I told him that I would never say a thing, except in this interview, but that's one time. So then I get bored with the circle. There was way too much smoke. A guy was walking around with a big incense chain, swinging it around. So I wandered farther into the room. And would you believe it? I go in the other rooms and painted on the floor in what looked like red paint was one of those giant Jewish stars that's missing a point.
Another pentagram. We covered this.
Well, in this room, there were four or five naked women, all at different points, each one wearing a different mask symbolizing the seasons of the year, with a fifth season representing the all-encompassing season of time. That's what it said on the pamphlet. No one would talk to me, so I just went around saying, good to meet you, Donald Trump. I kicked over a bunch of candles, and they said, you're breaking the salt line. And I said, what are you talking about? Apparently, when you do magic, the salt protects the circle inside. I kicked that salt all over the place because it was a total mess. And they said I brought about 1,000 years of death and blood on the fire. I said, whatever, I don't believe in that stuff. I hear another piano, and I went into another room. Maybe this guy will play Philadelphia Freedom by Elton John. So I walked by piles of writhing people all having the dirtiest sex you've ever seen. I mean, this was dirty. All I'm going to say is that there was definitely butt juice mixing with regular juice. Grinding, moaning, praying to gods whose names I can't even pronounce. I couldn't pronounce them, but I'll say this. It stunk in there. And if I were a god, I wouldn't go anywhere near this orgy. And then I got up to the pianist and I said, Philadelphia Freedom, huh, buddy? And he played it. Boy, this orgy took a turn. He was slamming out Philadelphia Freedom, and these people got up, and they started moving, and the real Elton John pulled his mask up, and he was there too. So the real Elton John and the real Billy Joel did one of their famous Madison Square Garden duets at Davos. They pushed their pianos together right there in the Illuminati party. I said, these Illuminati are great. This is where all the deals get made. We had a great time. It was a 2-hour concert. At the end, for an encore, they played New York State of Mind. Finally, someone with a giant eagle mask came up and said, Mr. President, could you come with me? They led me out, but not before I pulled as many masks up on as many people as I could see. And here's the top five. Nathaniel Rothschild, World Bank President, Kristalina Georgievna, whatever, Dick Cheney, Martin Mull, and crooked Hillary Clinton. And boy, did we laugh. The end? The end.
Why are you saying the end?
Because that's the end of the story.
Call Tim Cook, CEO of Apple.
And in the Garden of Eden, there was an apple. Hello, it's me.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Mr. Jobs.
Tim Cook.
Oh, whoops. Steve Jobs. Too many cooks in the kitchen makes the jobs dead. We used to have so many jobs, and now you're a cook. And that's what happened to America, and it's a huge problem. Now you're different from the other guy who ran Apple, right?
That's right. We miss Steve tremendously, and he meant so much to the company, but he passed away. And now it's my job to carry on his legacy. Now, the reason for this call, I'm told, is that you want my thoughts on a new jobs program.
Yeah, but you're not him.
Oh, I...
When are you going to die?
Well, I hope not anytime soon, sir.
How do you know?
Well, I guess I don't know. Do you know?
Yeah.
You know when you're going to...
Yeah, of course I do.
When, sir?
In the future.
Well, I suppose that's true of me, too.
What are you laughing at?
Oh, it's a polite laughter to cover parts of the conversation that would otherwise be silent.
My uncle went to Nikola Tesla's room after he died and took all his papers, so I know science.
I've heard that story. That's a fascinating story.
And that's how I know when I'm going to die.
What a strange coincidence.
I know I'm going to die because my uncle used a time viewer to see the future.
I see, sir. We'll have to invent one of those. Maybe that's a little bit of technology we can put in the next model of the iPhone.
Why would you do that? I don't understand.
Well, if you could try to look through time, I guess that would be a good feature for a smartphone, sir.
No, not really. The screen's too small.
How big was the screen that your uncle saw?
It was like a small portable tube television.
Well, that's about the same resolution as our Super Retina displays on the iPhone X.
Ooh, that's sexy.
We're just making them a little bigger, then a little smaller again, then we're going to make the pixels dense, and then we're going to spread them out, and then we're going to pack them in again, and then we're introducing more great new tech, like, you know, you can make yourself a cartoon pumpkin now.
Wow, really? I've always wanted to be a cartoon pumpkin.
Or instead of just sending a boring voicemail with just audio, you can send a cartoon of yourself as a piece of shit murmuring to itself.
Wow! I love that! That's so much fun. That makes voicemails fun to do again.
That's right. We're adding cameras and taking cameras away. We're going to make it sharp-edged, and then we're going to round the edges again, and then we're going to make them a little thinner, then a little thicker, then we're going to give it a little twist, and then...
Oh, boy, you're talking about my morning in the toilet. Listen, Apple has done so much. They've made so many great products, and let's say it, quite frankly, a lot of them when you weren't there. It's true that you got a lot to live up to. I mean, you've got a genius. You've got a guy you got to live up to, and I understand that. Because when you become the president, you live up to a lot of history. And there's a lot of history, and a lot of the greats came before you. But you got to become the best. And some say, a lot of people are saying, that I'm the best president that's ever lived. And someday they're going to say that about you. And eventually you'll get to change your name to Jobs. And then you'll be the new Steve Jobs.
Well, I guess that's one possibility, sir.
What's happening over there? Are you at a party?
No, sir. I just love chatting.
Okay. Now, the iPhone X is for pornography?
Well, we do have a private browsing mode, if that's what you're looking for today, sir, but it's for everyone. It's for everyone to do what they want. It's for exploring the limits of their own creativity.
How?
Apps?
You don't know.
We used to do GarageBand and Final Cut Pro, but I don't know.
I don't understand it. Now, I have a phone, and the reason I was calling today is that I can't find my drafts on Twitter.
Oh, you're calling for tech support?
What? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, can you help me get my drafts on Twitter?
Well, actually, Twitter's a third-party app. We don't directly support all the apps that run on the phone.
You gotta be kidding me. You don't know how Twitter works?
Well, I do know how Twitter works. You know, I don't really tweet personally.
You don't?
And they're a separate company from us, so...
Okay, so tell me how to do it.
I think there's probably a folder. You could go up to the root structure and find the folder that says drafts.
What the hell are you talking about? Tell me how to push the buttons.
You could probably go up a level and find a drafts folder.
Up a level? What?
Up a level in the folder structure.
I don't understand.
Or you could just go...
Where are my photos?
You could go onto a search engine and say, access Twitter drafts, and someone's probably written a how-to article about it, I'd imagine.
I don't have the time. Where are my photos?
Well, it depends on the settings on your phone. Your photos are in the phone, or if you use iCloud photo sharing, we store the full resolution.
I don't do the cloud. I don't do the cloud.
Well, you should, sir. It'll save you space on your phone.
I don't like the cloud.
You can save a little space on your phone, and then if we ever decide to change the way we store the photos, we'll just delete them forever.
So where are my photos now?
Well, if they were on Mobile Me photo sharing, they're gone. If they're on iCloud photo sharing, they're up there now, at least until we decide to do photos a different way. And if they're on your phone, they're just on your phone.
I look at the phone, and I see a picture.
Good. Well, that's at least one photo you have on there.
I think that's me on the phone. I think I'm taking a picture of myself.
Sir, in addition to your jobs program...
Rest in peace.
I actually wanted to talk to you about the tariffs on aluminum and some of the other metals.
Absolutely. The tariffs, they're killing us.
Well, the tariffs are going to really severely impact our business. But I should just warn you, businessman to businessman.
I'm a businessman!
The people most affected by the retaliatory tariffs from China against our country, and now that we've started this trade war, are likely going to be some of your constituents, sir, some of the people who voted for you.
No, those people are coal miners. They don't know about aluminum. Do you know they call it aluminium in Britain?
I did know that, sir. But the retaliatory tariffs from China are going to severely affect agriculture in some of the states that voted for you.
What metal is retaliatory?
Retaliatory isn't a metal, sir. It's a description of the way the Chinese are going to behave.
Is that Chinese?
Yes, sir.
For what?
Well, the word isn't Chinese, sir. It's a description in English of how the Chinese are going to react. They're going to retaliate.
Well, why didn't you say react?
I did.
Why say the other one?
It more correctly and precisely describes what I'm trying to say?
Not to me. It's totally confusing.
That's true. I guess that could be my fault.
Boy, I wish Steve Jobs was alive. He wouldn't be having a conversation like this.
I think he would.
No, he wouldn't.
I think he might.
He was a straight shooter.
I'm a straight shooter, sir.
You're a straight shooter? Oh, are you here to court my daughter?
No, sir. I'm gay, as it happens.
Oh, I know what happens. Believe me. Here's the point. China's hitting us with the aluminum. They're hitting us with the steel. And we're going to hit back. And you need to make the phones. And the phones need to be made of the aluminum and the retaliatory. And all the metals that go into it. And they make the apps. And the apps run. And they're fast. And we like to type in them. And you like to type in the technology. You want to keep making the cyber. And keep making the phone go bigger and smaller. Then you're going to have to make a deal. And you're going to have to go along with this China thing. You're just going to have to ride it out.
I understand, sir. Don't say I didn't warn you.
One more thing.
Yes?
Is Siri hot?
Between you and me? Yeah, she's a 10.
Wow, really?
Call Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany.
What's this ring? This isn't the right ring. Hello? Hello?
Hello, this is Angela Merkel.
What?
Angela Merkel.
What's that, a disease?
No, I'm the Chancellor of Germany.
Oh, Hail Hitler.
Oh, of course.
Don't you have to say that when you talk to Germans?
No, not in a long time. Those are days we wish to put behind us, Mr. President. The German people send their regards to the American people.
Oh, yeah, the American people say hi back. So, did you follow Hitler? Was it Hitler, then you?
No, Mr. President.
What was it like working for him? Did you work out of the bunker?
Mr. President, please.
I got a bunker.
I'm calling because your representatives from your administration have recently been attempting to negotiate a unilateral trade deal with Germany, and I wish to remind you again that the only deals we can make, the only trade deals we can make, are the one with the European Union. We are exclusive to the European Common Market.
Well, forget that.
And you'll have to make a trade deal with the European Union.
Who's talking about that?
Not the individual countries of the Union, sir.
Excuse me. First off, who in my administration, you tell me right now, who has talked to you about any unilateral deal?
It was one of your delegations to the G5, a lower-level discussion.
Give me a name.
I'll have to make some inquiries.
I'll fire whoever it is opening his mouth. I'm the only one who does unilateral.
Well, we can't do unilateral. That's my point.
I do unilateral. You don't do unilateral.
Well, you can't. You can't unilaterally make a deal with Germany. You have to bilaterally make a deal with the European Union.
Of course, Europeans. It's all about the buy everything. Let me tell you something. I get you Europeans do weird negotiations that are bilateral. But here in the United States, it's between one man and one woman. And I'm the man, and you're the woman, and we're going to make a deal.
I can't make a deal outside of the European Union.
We need to dissolve the European Union.
No, we do not.
Immediately.
No, we do not.
You guys did the Brexit.
No, we didn't.
When are you going to get out of there?
We didn't do the Brexit. In fact, we're hoping that the people of the United Kingdom will change their minds, especially now that we know there was Russian money behind the Brexit campaign.
The Brexit people are great people who live in Germany, who want freedom for themselves. I've seen them and the documentaries about them. They speak loudly in beer halls. They make great speeches about bringing Germany back to the people and back to the pure blood that made them great. And if the Russians want to help them there or here, I'll be the first guy to say, give me that money and get them into the G7.
I think you're conflating a few things, Mr. President.
The Germans are great people, great symbols, and rallies. We love to have rallies like you guys have. And I love the uniforms you have, really slick. You guys have a lot going for you. Why are you going to give it up? You got it all. You got the fashion. You got the symbols. You got the great leadership. I mean, you work for the guy. And now it's time for you to carry on his legacy.
I can assure you, I am not making any attempt to carry on Adolf Hitler's legacy.
No, you should make it your own. I've always believed that. It's very hard, especially when you take over for a male CEO as charismatic as he was. And let's face it, on this phone call, it's clear you're as boring as a wood plank. But the truth is, you got to distance yourself, separate yourself. But at the same time, don't drop what the guy had. He had a great economy, great speeches. People say Hitler was bad, but the guy was a vegetarian. He was a vegetarian, a goddamn hippie, a hippie Hitler. He also unified an entire people behind a nationalist, ethnocentric cause. That means white people. I'm not a vegetarian, and I did that. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Let me tell you, let's make a deal now. You do whatever you need to do. Tell the union, I want steel tariffs to go up 30%. I want to deal with you on electronics, on cyber. I want to make sure the computers are all aligned. Everybody has the right computer. I want to make sure Germans can come here, that they can bring their bread and their pretzels and their schnitzels. And in return, we'll export all the hot dogs and all the good stuff you guys like.
Again, I'm not in a position to make that deal. You'll have to talk to the European Council.
Why are you crawling up my ass like this? Can I ask you that? Why is it that every woman I talk to, there's a big problem? Why are you making it such a big problem? Okay, Angelo?
Angela.
If you say so. Now listen, Europe and Germany have had a great relationship. And so has America with the United States. We all have the same interests at heart. And we need to be kinder to Russia. And we need to be nicer to Russia. And we must involve Russia in everything. And the EU, the Easy Pass, the EA Sports. The more we get Russia involved, the better off we'll be. NATO is bye-bye. Angela, who's the boss? I am. And I say we make a deal. I want to get little shoes from you people. You have the best shoes. I want to go. You have a Black Forest cake?
Yes, sir. I was going to have one for lunch.
Jesus, let me tell you, that's your first problem.
With my staff.
Okay, let's face it. Angela, I'll say your name right. You said you're going to have the whole cake for lunch. Then after the fact, you said you're going to share it with your staff.
Fine, we'll make a deal.
There you go.
And now, a special offer from Breitbart Press. Does occult political intrigue intrigue you? All the thrilling Jack Renegade novels by Honey Badger Steve Bannon, Corey Alanis, are available in paperback and hardcover from your local bookstore. Or order through the mail with the form below. They make a great Christmas or Saturnalia gift for the dad who enjoys marginalia and theurgy.
Book One. The true story of Western civilization can be found in the halls of the libraries of Amenti and in the secret book of Thoth. In the legendary Book of Hermetica, our European Western heritage is informed by thousands of years of prehistoric dominance brought forth by the high priestesses of Atlantis and carried by the great Western traditions of Plato, Socrates, and Aristotle. In all these mysteries, there is one common cycle. There are many turnings, each one happening every 32,000 years, according to the great star calendar of the ancients. Each turning is an alchemical process by which mankind is transformed and refined into a higher state being. Only those of select breed and genetic purity have the advantageous ability to recognize these turnings. I have often written of the fourth turning in human civilization, but it has been revealed to me that there was another turning. It turns out the fourth turning turned earlier. It turned completely over, like a pancake or a waffle. This pancake turning occurs symbolically in the destruction of the great pillars Joachim and Boaz, known in the vernacular as the Twin Towers, on September 11th, 2001. It was this ceremony of ritual sacrifice prefigured in the bombing of the garage below and harmonic 8 years before that charred those pure souls into the husks of humanity that would save Western civilization for the 21st century and beyond. For this is called the fifth sucking. By some in modern era, it is known as a rapture, but this is too foolish and simple a term for the grand design of the true architect of our universe. Could I simply tell you what the fifth sucking is? Indeed, I could. But man is a storyteller, and stories have characters. Persona means mask, and masks are fiction. So in the great tradition of Homer, this epic is better sung. Jack Renegade whipped his 2018 Lamborghini Hurricane down the winding roads of the Amalfi Coast. It was a typical drive for him. High speed, hot thrills, and all the excitement that came with being the former political advisor to the President of the United States. He had been out of the business for more than a year. It had sucked him dry. It was yet another series in a string of disappointments resulting from his being unappreciated and misunderstood by those he had supported with his loyalty and labor. He knew that the man at the top, the big boss, the guy that mattered, he could reach him and hear him. But it was all the flotsam and jetsam of the fallen world surrounding him that troubled Jack Renegade so deeply. So, lost in thought, Jack realized too late that he was heading straight for a cliff. He threw the wheel. His Hurricane went into auto-steering lock mode. It was specially designed for moments like this. Jack knew he could get lost in thought. Those thoughts made him money, and money made him power. So the truth is, sometimes he had to turn over control. The car slid over the gravel, the back edge of the Hurricane just barely dusting the guardrail, shooting sparks into the summer air. Jack muttered to himself, regulations. He knew the Amalfi Coast as one of the great sanctuaries of the Knights Templar and their 12th century crusade toward Jerusalem. These great knights, men who slept with each other and spent their time in piety and filth, knowing that bringing glory to God was worth their great sacrifice. The Templar talisman that dangled from the rearview mirror reminded Jack that he was a part of this important lineage of martyrdom and bloody conquest. The car rolled to a stop, just at the edge of the cliff. Another close one, Jack thought, as he stepped out of the car. Perfect timing, said a familiar voice from behind a rock. It was Gerhard Bertolf, an art collector and practitioner of dark magic and the ancient rituals of the days of old. He appeared as a wizard, like Merlin from the Heath, and Jack knew he had something up his sleeve. This meeting had been set for months. It was time for Jack to get back in the fold, but the only way he could would be to discover the lost tome of the fifth sucking. Its text long forgotten by its rightful heirs. His journey had just begun, but he was already weary and ready to weep, and he knew that between him and Bertolf, only one of them would survive the night. Book Two. Jack didn't think he'd find himself in this part of Boston again. Last time he was in Southie, he left the next morning with scrapes on both knuckles and a real shiner, but he was better for it. If he could scrap with those Southie boys, he could take anything. But here he was, once again walking by the Purple Shamrock, one of the most notable bars in all of South Boston. And there was a little secret that none of the locals knew. This place had been the original lodge of the master Freemasons of the York Rite. The lodge closed in 1781, soon after George Washington became president. He had been the master of the lodge, and there was no reason for them to stay above ground, as certain secrets were best kept buried. This had been a local haunt for Jack Renegade, back in his Harvard days. All the other stuffed suits went to the Tasty, or spent their nights listening to jazz and seeing plays at the ART. But Jack Renegade had no time to waste on trifles. He didn't take a cab from Cambridge to Southie, but a series of bus connections, like a commoner. He rode with the people to hone his understanding of why certain tribes weren't meant to be together. They understood that in Southie. It was in their blood. Hell, they...